Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning once again. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and thanks for tuning in to American Tennis today. We apologize for the technical problems we had. Made a start a half hour late here this morning on this Wednesday morning. But you can get American Tennis every week at 12 noon Eastern Standard Time on the UR Tennis Network. That's U. R, the number 10, and then S, the letter U, the letter R, number 10, and then the letter S. Also, check my website out at chuckcreasy.net each week, and you can get every one of the shows that we have had over the past nearly 2 years already on the UR Tennis Network. This is Chuck Creasy. We also have a website called T3 Mentorship. That's the letter T3. Mentorship.com, where you can see my videos, and some other information and different things that you would like to pick up on tennis and things that we are doing and trying to stay on the cutting edge of. Every week we remind you that your job is to stand up and to speak out as Americans. Do not stay quiet when something is wrong. We need to get past cliches and facts and go to the opinions that you have and just stay professional, address issues, not people, and nobody can find fault. Edmund Burke said that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing. And if you do nothing, things are just sort of going to go according to the status of the bureaucracies and the way that the wind is taking you. But we need to stand up, and I love the internet, and I love the radio for these reasons that we can say what we want to say. Every week we have issues that come up that are important to the world of tennis, but I've taken a different turn lately. I am now starting to talk to different educators, to people who are in. We had Dr. Jim Poole on 2 weeks ago talking about fast brain. We've had motivators on and different people. Last week we had Ms. Betsy Williams on talking to coaches about how to set up their financial plan for the future and how very hard it is to make a living in tennis today, but how to do it. She gave some great, great insights if you'll go back to the show last week, which was October 16th. But this week I'm going in a little bit different direction. I've asked a former tennis player, one of the highest ranked tennis players in the junior ranks, and a great college player, captain of his team, and who did many, many excellent things in tennis, to come on the show and talk about his journey from start to where he is right now, and give some people some insights. I love doing this. About earlier this last month, it was in September, we had Brian Minton on, and he came on and talked about just how hard it is to bring a player from 8 years old, Shelby Rogers, to 120 in the world where she is now as a 19-year-old. And the journey is just, it's a hard one in tennis. It's probably the hardest of all sports. But there is really a couple things that we always remind players, that you have to have the stomach to lose, and you have to have the stomach to make everything that happens to you turn into something good. The bad things have to turn into good things. The good things have to be turned into good things. And really, if you don't have the stomach for the ups and the downs that happen in tennis, you really cannot hang in there. It's a wonderful, wonderful sport, but the best thing might be of what it does inside of people. So with that, I'm going to introduce our guest on the line. I think we have Brad Emmendorfer. Brad, are you on the line there with us from Chattanooga this morning?
I am, Coach. Can you hear me okay?
You're on loud and clear, and thanks for coming on American Tennis today. Brad, I've been approaching the shows a little bit differently. We talk about tennis a lot, but you know, sports basically calls upon the king and the queen and the man to step up and do the job. It doesn't have any tolerance for sort of the slacker or the person who's not going to stand up and just have the guts to lose. I wanted to say, starting out, though, that my relationship with you goes back all the way to, I think it was about 1991 or 2. I'm trying to think what year it was. I saw you play as a 15-year-old in Boston, Massachusetts. You were the number one seed in the boys' national 16 and under hardcore championship, indoor championship there in Boston, Massachusetts. And what year was that? No. It had been later. It was 96, 97.
Yeah, I think it may have been. It was 95 or 96. And I was going to say, sports can humble you, and by adding 4 or 5 years to my life there, by saying it was 91, I can handle that through being humbled in the past.
I think
it was 95.
Anyhow, Brad, you were the number one seed there, and I wanted to see what just made the number one seed the number one seed. I think they had Michael Morrison was in the tournament. I think James Blake was in the tournament, and all of these guys. And I saw a fella as the number one seed who looked like a linebacker to be from the state of Tennessee, from a small town of Athens, Tennessee. And so right away I'm going, whoa, how'd this guy get good in Athens, Tennessee? And I watched your match and watched you play, and fundamentals were excellent. Toughness of mind, toughness of heart, a great competitor. But, Brad, you went on from there to being a highly recruited player, and I've got to tell people I was very fortunate to get you away from the University of Tennessee, and where your father actually was a star. I think he was an offensive guard, was he? What was his position, actually, Brad, at the University
That's
of Tennessee?
That's correct. He played offensive guard and defensive tackle at UT from 69 to 72.
Back in the glory years,
Coach
really,
Battle.
Of UT football under Coach Bill Battle. And, the thing is so, so interesting is that everybody, I think, had given up on recruiting you. Everybody knew that you were going to the University of Tennessee. I thought there might be a chance to get you to think otherwise, and I hung in there, and I heard 15 times, now he's going to Tennessee. That's where his father went. He's orange, blue, and blue, blue and through, and I said, well, maybe you can, you know, change the color to orange a little bit and make it darker and come to Clemson. You did come to Clemson, and Brad, and my golly, what an honor it has been to know you and to work with you and to see you mature and to see you grow into a manhood. And to you were a team captain in 2000, and you ended up your season senior year playing number one singles, number one doubles, and just a warrior of a competitor but a prince of a man. And you know, so that's your story. I'd like to start out sort of just by asking you to tell your story about how you got into tennis, being from a football family and being there in the University of Tennessee, so close and so into things there. But Brad, also Athens, Tennessee, come on. I mean, how in the world do you get good in Athens, Tennessee? Could you tell your story a little bit? Go ahead.
Sure. I'd love to appreciate the introduction, Coach. I think it just seemed to – it was just that was – God's plan for me was tennis. It would be the most unlikely of avenues that anyone, including myself, probably would have predicted. But growing up in an athletic family, or my father being an athlete, in a small town in Tennessee, many people in the Southeast can probably relate that Tennessee football is the professional team for this area of the state, especially in the small community. So it's bigger than life to many people, Tennessee football is. And as long as I can remember, I was going to play football at Tennessee. That was, football was my passion from the time I could have memory, because that was what my father did, and we watched it a lot and swore his passion. And he instilled that to where it just seems as if it was with me since birth. But he had a rule that he did not want us to be involved in football until the same rule that his father gave him. I believe it was when you were 13 or 14. So I played other sports, and tennis was one that came along. I started just casually taking a couple lessons from a local instructor. But just the passion to, if you're going to do things, you want to provide the proper way to do them. I think my father found, what he had heard to be the best instructor in the small 15,000-person community of Athens that he knew of, Rob Cameron, who the Cameron brothers were well-known in Athens because they were on the tennis court every day, all day, trying to be tennis players. And so when I was about 10 or 11, my father approached Rob Cameron and asked him if he didn't mind working with me to kind of teach me tennis. And I'm not sure at that point in time what my dad's expectations were. I know that I was wanting to play any sport that I could get a hold of. And I think early on, Rob had seen potential probably in mainly the core values my dad had already instilled in us, and that's attitude and work ethic. And it's funny, there's no age that's too young to learn the values of giving your best no matter what you're doing. And so as Rob and I worked together and he communicated with my father he saw potential, and I was enjoying it and seeing progress, I took it from there and began to experience success, smaller levels, and then decided that was something that I thought I could be a professional at. And at that point in time, by the time I was old enough to play football, really my passion was to become, I guess, Yvonne Lindell at that time was my idol, because Rob thought that I had a work ethic similar to Lindell. And therefore, at that point, I had a mission at a pretty young age that was my goal, was to become tennis player. So,
Rob, let me jump in there, Brad. Brad, let me jump in real quick here. But an interesting thing. Look, we've often brought up the statistic that 72% of professional athletes in the United States come from rural, not urban communities. And the interesting thing is Athens, Tennessee is a town of what? 30,000, 20,000? How big is Athens, Tennessee?
It's like, I think it's like 20,000, Coach, 25,000.
20,000. So, but here's the point that I want to make and jump in there. You clung to, you had excellence around you and your father, and everything that was pursued in an excellent way. Your father, you know, you saw, you knew his career, you knew that he was excellent, you knew that there was no corners cut. Then Rob was the same way as a teacher. But here's the point. In a small town, you had the advantage of not maybe knowing how hard it might be also to be Yvon Lendl. In other words, they didn't show you the top of every mountain and point it out. They kept there was smog on or smoke on top of the mountain or clouds on top of the mountain. Would you say that it was good to not know how hard?
I think that there's, you know, I was blessed with the best of both worlds in that in a small town, no matter what people are doing, most small, or at least the small town I was raised in, work is something that everybody, most everybody has instilled in them because their father, no matter what they're doing, they work. I mean, everybody works and works hard. You know, the disadvantage sometimes is in a small town, you know, you think that if you drive to the edge of town that you'll fall off the face of the earth. And nobody knows, you know, how successful you can be. The county championship is the biggest thing. So, therefore, the belief sometimes isn't instilled of how much potential someone may have because they've always been told that they will stay in town their whole life. My dad, fortunately, instilled the work, and I was surrounded by people who knew how to work hard, and he also had seen, you know, the highest level of football and instilled belief in me through his belief. You know, I had self-belief because he believed in me, and he taught me to not let someone else tell you what your limits are, I guess.
And the beauty, you know, we had a couple players on earlier this year that have really, we talked about their journeys of going through junior tennis into college tennis into trying professional tennis. And this is the point I really want to make that I think hits home over and over and over again. Not knowing every pitfall really helped you keep your eyes on the goal, perhaps. And I think that we might make mistakes in our children in that we show them so much with the internet. It's hard now not to with the internet, or we take them to every pro game and things like that. And it's very good that you were able to become the big fish in that smaller town and then transfer to be a bigger fish in maybe the state, and then you just progressed on, and you were able to keep your eyes on just the next step in front of you. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Do you think
it
that
does.
Is
it's
accurate?
Funny. It's funny. Yeah, I think I was thinking earlier, you know, so many times you wonder inside whether you belong because you get to the highest, you know, you're the biggest fish in one pond, and then you go to the next pond, and you're at another arena, and you look around, and you feel like, wow, this is overwhelming. Well, then you keep training, and as you succeed at that level, all of a sudden it becomes the level that you have established yourself, and then you have to raise to the next level. So every time you go to a new level, you re-enter the phase of, wow, am I really deserving to be here? And the key is, you know, continuing to try to push that aside to say, let's, you know, I'm not worried about do I belong here. I'm going to go through the process and let that take care of itself. You know, so I'm going through it again with my own children. We're at the first level again in the smaller community in East Tennessee right near Athens. And it's funny. It's just deja vu of when I was 10 years old in Athens playing in the Friendly City Classic.
We want to talk about the transferring of everything that you've been through into your business, ups and downs, and your children and everything. We got to go to commercial. We'll be right back with Brad Emmendorfer. This is Chuck Creasy. We'll be right back.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Coach Chuck Creasy, Made in America. Brad Emmendorfer, Made in America. Small town America, Athens, Tennessee. Tennis career to the highest point in junior tennis, being a top player in the United States, and then also getting your going through college and all the experiences you've had, and now transferring them to your adult life and to, of course, being the most important job we have is being parents. And Brad, Vesa Ponca at College Park, where I worked before coming to the Citadel, is a brilliant man. But not only that, he's just a good judge of character, disciplinarian, a hard worker, no shortcuts. But he tells the kids out of the blocks, he tells them, you have to have two abilities. You have to have the stomach to lose a lot, and then you have to have stomach to travel. Tennis is tough, so if you don't like being in hotels and traveling, and if you can't handle losing, then you better go to cheerleading corps or something, take some other side seat to this tough sport. Would you agree with that? And I want to transfer this to maybe talking about your toughness in things and being able to handle adversity. Can you talk about a few of the losses maybe you had real quick that maybe you felt
sure.
like quitting?
Well, I'll tell you. First of all, you have to be able to handle losing if you want to be successful at sports. But in reality, it's in everything you do, because everybody is going to fail. But that doesn't mean you lose, I don't think. I think it's the old quit or try again. And honestly, the biggest lessons in my whole life have always come from a failure that was minimal. I never forget when I broke through in tennis to the national stage and finally realized that I thought I belonged was in February of 95, I was a top four seed in one of the Southern Super Circuit. I don't remember what they were called, in a Southern tournament. And basically lost to a guy that I think ended up being a college player. I'll never forget his name, Bo Petro, in a match where I was scared of losing instead of just playing to win, which you hear all the time. But I lost. I fought hard, but I was too scared to let myself come out of my shell. Well, the adversity I faced, it was the deepest depression I'd probably had at that point in my life. I worked so hard. The next week was my first national tournament that I was going to get to play that year. It was in Aiken, South Carolina. So I'd just come off the biggest loss to somebody. Of course, you're caught up in things that are perception and not reality, but I'd lost to what I perceived and everyone else perceived to be a big upset. And I just went back to work. Honesty, sports creates honesty, whether somebody's telling it to you or not. You know inside what really happened. If you're keeping score, it shows up on the scoreboard. If you're not keeping score on the scoreboard, everybody's keeping score in their heart. You know what happened, regardless of what they try to do with the rules. So we went back to work, and the next week had a real nervous first match and overcame some tough points and ended up getting to the finals of this tournament in Aiken, South Carolina. And that was the furthest I'd ever come in a national tournament. And I remember thinking that I am good enough, but my father is right. You know, I finally believe it myself. And that kind of sparked the year I had. It was a successful year. But then 5 years later, Coach, you remember, I was started every match I ever played in my senior year. We're about to go to Boise, Idaho. And I let, I kind of got to where I was resting on my resume, I guess, with the team, and told me, you're not traveling. You're out of shape. You're not committed right now. I'm not going to let you travel. We're honest up front, and it devastated me. My uncle lived in Boise, and it was going to be the only time he ever got to see me play tennis. And plus, I had to stay home and not be on even the travel team, more or less the starting team. And I'll never forget working out with Preston in the weight room and how depressed I was. And then, of course, they had a tournament in Clemson that weekend, and some kids from Chattanooga are in town, and I'm playing a practice match. And they come over and ask where the team is and then ask how the Immendorfer kid's doing. And, of course, I had to suck my pride up and tell them that I'm doing fine. I'm right here. I didn't get to travel. And it was embarrassing, but I had to say it, and it probably made it better. And, of course, the end of the year, I broke through from that. And then there's been major events in my business life where the same thing happened, and the greatest thing is I can always tell myself when I'm going through a hard time. I'll recall back to a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old tennis match to help me get through something that is far more significant in the big picture of my family life, because I got through something like that, and at that time it was the biggest thing in my life. So it's equal now, because that's how much it meant to me then. So,
Brad, talk about it. And there, the statement for this always is, breakdowns happen before breakthroughs. We've heard that many times, right?
Yes,
breakdowns always
sure.
happen before breakthroughs. And I even wrote an article about this back in the mid-'80s that I have. I've sent it out to kids before and parents. And everybody gets to that place of devastation where they're ready to give up, and then they have to either quit or you try again. And I can tell you story after story similar to yours, but I remember very, very well the situation with not making the travel trip. And I gave you an assignment. You went and did it. You did the next right thing, you know. And I was preaching that yesterday to my team. Do the next right thing. You do badly, do the next right thing. You do well, do the next right thing. And you can say do the next responsible thing sometimes, because you don't know if it's the right thing or not. But talk a little bit about, you know, after you graduated now, you went into the business world, I remember, and then you taught tennis for a while. And some of your students have shown really good success that you worked with in those early years with Doug Pilot over in Greenville. But you went to business, and, you know, your father was very wise. He did a lot of restaurants, but I've always said his best job I've ever seen of raising somebody, because instead of him bringing you into the family business and sort of giving you a cush way to just get a pedigree in a hurry, he let you go out and struggle for about 5 years. But eventually you went into the restaurant business, and could you talk about the hardships there. It was right about the time of the recession and stuff. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Well, I'll tell you, he instilled early on in sports and everything that nothing comes easy if you really want to truly succeed in it. And so hard work was something, again, that was instilled from day one. And it teaches you honesty. He would not sugarcoat. He believed and truly believed, and he would always tell me whether and what he thought. He was honest with it, whether it was, you know, succeeding or not truly reaching the potential. So he had a plan that I needed to go out and learn from others for 4 years before I could come work with him. He had a very successful business for many years. It's almost like saying that you could train for 4 years and you get to go to, you know, you're basically going to sign a deal with a professional team, I guess. So I put in that time, and then my wife and I moved to Knoxville, Tennessee for me to work with my father. And the plan was that my father, this was going to be the business that I took over at some point down the road. But that was my future after I decided to take the business path, was in this business that my father had created. So I learned so much through the things that I, you know, that was taught by coming into his business from him and from his past experiences. When the economy took its downturn, I believe it was the mid-2000s, the restaurant industry suffered severely, particularly fine dining and casual dining. That was what the majority of our company was in. So we had to, I mean, as it started immediately, we have to start making changes and adapting to the current situation. And you go from something that you saw as your family, basically you're going to take this over and provide for your own family, as I just got married, to something that you are now in the fight of your life to try to overcome a situation that's been given to you that you can't control. And honestly, during those times, that was definitely the hardest times I've faced in my life. But you reach back to same adversities that you had as a child. And what I learned through that is my dad and I always say I got my master's during those times, because through those down times was the most development and learning that I ever had. It just so happened that towards the end of that time, unfortunately we had to close a restaurant, which is the first time I'd ever done that, and I had to face the people who worked for me, explain, tell them the truth of what had happened, tell them how sorry I truly was, and look in their eyes, and the pride you can take from it, I guess, looking back, is that they knew I was sincere, and therefore they felt bad in return. The opportunity that presented itself at that point was my cousin and I were looking at a possible franchising opportunity outside of my father's business. We were able to come across a concept that was up and coming, got the details of that, and I turned it over to my father and said, look, I really want to get out and chase this opportunity on my own now. And he, just like the Tennessee decision, everybody thought my dad wanted me to go to Tennessee. And in all honesty, he and my mother were the two people that never pushed me to go to Tennessee, just like it would be for your son to leave the business that you dreamt of, you know, expanding together. He said, you cannot not, you have to take this opportunity. This is a great opportunity for you. So at that point, I branched away from my father's business and started a franchise here in Chattanooga, a concept on my own in the industry that he trained me in. So really hard
and
a lot of emotions. Go ahead.
But it wasn't all he trained you in, and you had a tough job in, and you dove right back into the same pool or the same situation where you had been hurt. That's the point. you talked about your devastating loss in the Southern tournament and then your breakthrough after your breakdown. You jumped right back into the work ethic as a 16-year-old or 15-year-old. You jumped back right back into the work ethic in college. You jumped right back into the work ethic here with the same thing. If at first you don't succeed, try again. What happens now, Brad, is kids, if at first you don't succeed, they change a channel or they try something else or let's go on and move on to something else. That is the key. That is the key. You know, you went right back. Why? Go ahead.
I think just, you know, honestly, I guess fortunately that quitting was never an option at anything in your life. You finish it. And then also not fearing failure. I mean, like I said, I lost when I was 15 because I was afraid to lose. And I learned that the reason I had not succeeded in sports or in that tournament in particular, if you become afraid of failing, you cannot succeed. And I guess it was so instilled at that point that it's you look at the payoff, is the payoff worth the risk? Well, of course it is, because if there's opportunity in front of you and you feel like you have the skill set to succeed at it, you've put in the time and you're willing to take on the, you know, whatever comes with it, you know, the ultimate failure is not trying to do something that you have an opportunity to do and that's realistic. I mean, again, my father wouldn't have told me to take that opportunity, or I wouldn't have believed that I could have walked on a football field and played football because I hadn't played football, but I had the tools in this other arena, and I was offered an opportunity to compete at the next level as a business owner, and therefore, I guess, again, because of sports and because of certain losses or things overcoming adversity in sports, fear of failing does not exist. And tennis is the best sport for that, because I always give my dad a hard time. In football, you got 7 days to recover from a loss. Although, as a Clemson grad, first thing I told my own son on Saturday was...
No, you're not even going to go there. Don't even go there. Folks, this is the week that Clemson didn't do so well against Florida State. Brad, we're not going to talk about it. Do you want to talk about that? You really want to dig up that one?
Hey, I just said, son, look, I'm as frustrated as you are, but guess what? We'll decide next week how they come back, and then we'll show our pride in what they do next week with their heart, because they can learn more next week now. But anyway, you can go to break.
Okay, I got you. And you know, as fans, you know, we're flippant and we jump around. And even in coaching right now, after I saw that the other night, I go, oh, my golly, I don't want to get my heart broken like that again.
Yeah.
I'm still a Clemson football fan, but we have to. We have to dive
in
again.
In tennis, they would have had an hour to recover and play in the consolation. I've been beat really bad, and you have to find out in an hour what you're made of.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
You know,
Brad, one thing I want to bring up to parents out there, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I got to throw this in or I'll forget. The one thing you said your father did, we've mentioned it before on this show, that the two greatest gifts that your parents can give their children are roots and wings. Roots that you know that you know that you know that you're going to do the right thing through come hell or high water, as they say. And the wings are the thing that is so impressive. Your father gave you the wings to try tennis instead of football, then to go to Clemson instead of University of Tennessee, then to strike out on your own here. Do you understand that is the real love with a child that we do as parents? But when you love your child enough to let them go in their own direction, and it's not about you, it's about that. I mean, I'm just sitting here, and I know on a level of zero to 100. I mean, he went through to the moon on giving you the roots and then the wings to try, you know, to try and
that's right.
Your own thing, you know. So that's a brilliant thing that, no, it's not a brilliant, it's a hard, heart-wrenching thing that we have to do with our children. The roots are sometimes easier than the wings, but to let them go. But, Brad, I want to talk.
Exactly right.
Go ahead. I want to talk about your own kids and what you're going through here in a second. We got to go to a commercial, but we'll be right back with Brad Immendorf. This is a great talk, Brad. Just hang on the line here a few minutes, folks, and we'll get to your calls when we come back. This is Chuck Creasy.
This is Jason Haynes, CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At USSportCamps.com, you can plan out a Nike tennis camp experience. These are offered to both adults and juniors for day and overnight camps. Visit USSportCamps.com to pick up a brochure and join over 50,000 youth who say yes to our summer camp experience. Join a Nike tennis camp at www.ussportcamps.com or call us at 1-800-NIKE-CAMPS. In 2013, let our summer camps be your victory. Choose the Nike tennis camps and take your game to the next level.
And we're back, American Tennis, with Brad Immendorfer. And, Brad, this is great stuff. I'm going to be able to refer to this show for a long time and let parents listen as well. We've got a caller on the line that I'm going to bring onto the show here, Brad. This area code 678-467. Caller, are you on the line? Would you like to talk to Brad this morning?
Hey, good morning. I just got on, Coach. This is J.P. Weber.
Oh, hey, J.P., how are you doing, and how's everything there in Marietta, Georgia, buddy?
It's doing great. I actually had a comment that I was wanting to pass by you guys and get your reaction to it.
Okay. Yeah, you're on.
Brad, there was a I don't know if you're familiar with the Petrine family. There's a guy, their son, Don Petrine, down in Florida. He his parents ran the Orange Bowl for many years, so he's got a lot of history. I think he went to UPenn or something, Coach. I'm not sure. But in his there's a thing, I don't know, Brad, if you're on it, or Coach Creasy, if you're on it. There's another thing. You got the League Coach Tennis, but there's also, I think there's a bigger one. It's called the United States Junior Tennis Legends Circuit. And he says, to paraphrase an esteemed member of the group from a private conversation we're having, there is a philosophy out there that kills me. It is the philosophy of putting the cart before the horse in junior development, homeschooling too soon, moving to Florida, playing up before getting to the top of their age group, teaching modern buggy whip follow-throughs before learning to even hit through the ball, open stance on everything, even when there's a lot of time to step in at a young age. There's no shortcut, and you pay your dues to reach the next level. And this is from a person who's done it all as a player, coach, and parent, with incredible success, by the way. Kathleen Horvath has commented on this on here, Coach Creasy. A lot of guys have jumped in on this. You know, my whole thing is that I think it's the greedy pigs. The parents are sort of greedy about things. Everybody's greedy. They want to get quick results. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. I would love to hear both of your guys' take on that. I hope I didn't pull you off of a subject you guys were – and I'll shut up.
No, it's perfect. Hang on there and make comments. But I wanted to ask this, Brad, anyway, about raising your own kids and some of your revelations. We talk about your dad being your mentor, now you being your children's mentor. You know, can you comment on what JP has said here?
Yes, I mean, it's so true that, and you know, my children, I've got an 8-year-old son and a 6-year-old son, and they're, for their age, heavily involved in sports. And first I'll say, Coach, that, you know, your comment about giving them the wings and the roots. The wings, now that I'm a parent, it's very, very easy for me to say that the wings are the hardest thing, because you want it so bad for your child that you want to do it for them. And then, it, as JP said, the greedy pigs, it can turn from a guardian angel to a greedy pig in a hurry because of today's society. I was thinking about it earlier. You go from trying to create a developmental program where you don't keep score early, and therefore, like I said, everybody really knows inside that the child knows whether they were successful or not. And then you go immediately into overemphasizing stats and rankings. It's not just in tennis. My children are in other sports, and I can tell you there's websites where they wrestle, okay? And there's a website in wrestling that keeps their record, and it rates their wins, and it shows pictures of these kids, and it creates pecking order very early. And the parents are the ones that have created it. They're so obsessed with what the current status of their child is. I'm not sure that, you know, I'm sure that they don't mean it because they love their children, but it's gotten, they've lost reality of the process, and you know, therefore they want to learn that, you know, that big backswing in a forehand, or they want to learn that specialty shot that's going to do something to give them status, and that's where we're off. We go from teaching them that everything's okay, everybody's a winner, to immediately, what is your status on this site? And I don't know how to fix it except for that I know that I steer it as far clear of those type of things as I can with my children, because I don't ever want them to think of someone else as too or not worthy or too worthy. You know, I don't want them to judge others based on some sheet or some, you know, they've got to respect everybody the same and focus on their own, you know, improvement and, I guess, progression, doing what's right.
JP, what are your thoughts?
Coach, I got here, it's funny. I followed up on that thing, and I mentioned to Mr. Petrine on his thread on that thing. I arrived here in the Atlanta area in 1996. I expected to see. I went to a guy that was a longtime friend of yours, and still is, I think, Jerry Baskin. I expected to see all sorts of fancy, glossy brochures and things of that nature. He had a mimeographed single sheet of paper that told what times were what and how much it cost. That was it. And he's gotten the job done ever since. The other guy that I mentioned to him was another longtime friend of yours, Coach. You tend to attract him to you, and it was probably embarrassing if he ever finds out that I mentioned him. But I mentioned Coach Chuck Waldron. He's in South Carolina, Clinton, South Carolina, small town. He's insulated from a lot of the pressures that you find at some of these, you know, in these big cities, and homeschool this and homeschool that. And they're doing it right there, Coach. I've been there now 3 or 4 times to see him. And what I notice is, and what he talks about is the fact, that his kids end up winning a whole lot more as they get a little bit older, the 16s and 18s and things like that. He doesn't take shortcuts. I was very impressed with a couple of his girls there, young girls, using one hand on their backhand volleys, hitting backhand slices, hitting, you know, being able to play a complete game. And I think that's sort of what, you know, that's where this conversation sort of led, you know, when they talk about American tennis, they talk about the pressures that are on players, parents, and coaches. The business side, Coach, I'd love to hear, you know, Brad's thought, you know, there's a whole, Coach, you know, if you can harken back to if you can remember this, a talk that I had with J.W. Eisenhower, where he talked about the mentorships are gone. We've got the business of tennis now. So you got big academies, big this, big that. I remember that conversation with him. And
people call
like
kids clients, too. Have you ever heard that? People call kids clients.
Yeah. And I remember, they call them clients, but I also remember a show you did with the parent of the boy from Bloomington, is it not? And they didn't do
Yeah, that was Ronnie Schneider. Ronnie's a freshman over at University of North Carolina. But his father, Ron, and the brilliant job he did at bringing him up in Bloomington, Indiana, that was really cool. I won't get into that, but he said basically the formula was he was around excellence and so many fields, and he just transferred that to tennis, and he had great people around there, like, of course, Kenny Heidinger and the great example, Randy Blumenthal up there and things. But again, it was the small town. Go ahead, JP. The small town atmosphere, being a big fish in a small pond, worked.
I think you've done it, and a lot of these guys, it ends up being, you see now, there was just a recent thing where somebody had just changed and a new guy come in, and the new guy came in, and he has 10 different coaches there, a psychologist coach, and this, and that, a homeschool program, 50 different things, and yet it seems to me that the guys that keep it simple tend to have more success. They don't.
Yeah,
the guys that keep it simple don't call their client their kids.
That ain't
client.
It. Fancy ain't it. Fancy ain't it. It's not what happens to you. It is what happens in you. And we do all of these programs. We keep seeing the systems. It's not the systems. It's giving the kids incentives and cutting them loose and saying, go get it, kids. And kids will figure it out. They're naturally competitive if they're going to be drawn to this sport. And if they're not, they won't stay in the sport because there's too much losing that goes on. But, JP, you're right on the mark. You know, Brad, I want to ask you here a little bit more about your kids. Action steps, using the Boy Scouts, they used to talk about action steps to get things right. You know, what are the action steps? Can you give some parents some ideas out there? I mean, if you could preach on national TV every night, what for parents to do? What would you be telling them, Brad?
I would say that you've got to instill, rules that can create qualities. That one thing at such a young age, you know, trust me, I've been out of competition since 2001, and as far as the sports arena. So honestly, I love, you know, my passion is sports, and I take it to work every day, and I have a pre-meal and try to. That's my pre-game for my staff, is trying to be a motivator now, and with my children. It's very important. We've structured rules, okay? So you can play anything that you want. The rule is, if we sign up for it, you will not quit until the season's over. If you don't want to do a sport, that's perfectly fine. We will not force you into doing anything you don't want to do. However, there's a commitment involved when you sign up for something. Therefore, you'll finish out your commitment. The other thing you'll do is respect what you're asked to do. I have a personal rule that my kids don't know. I would never tell my child I disagreed with a coach. The biggest thing I see is parents talking about coaches' mistakes in front of their kids. So therefore, they create a child with this perception that their coach is wrong because they heard their mom and dad say it. Well, the coach, you've trusted the coach by signing up for the sport, and therefore you should honor that by not letting your child have any other opinion than to respect the coach. Now, if you disagree with the coach, I don't think there's anything wrong with having different opinions. That's a separate conversation that's between the parent and the coach and what the coach's guidelines are. I think it's very important to have that up front as a coach. Look, I love your child. I'm going to do my best with your child. But you've got to let me be their coach, because so many parents have 10 coaches for their kid, and they've created something that can be a crutch. You know, if my psychologist isn't at the match, then I have something else to worry about. You know, it's like, see, all these strengths create weaknesses, because there's always it just gives you another reason on why you may not have coming through. So for my children, they can do whatever they want as long as they show respect, commitment, and give their best. I mean, the coach used to call me meat and potatoes, because you say, you know, you're just boring, you know, but everybody eats it. You know,
but everybody still eats meat and potatoes.
I tell my kids, look, guys, we're not going to be dancing in the end zone here. We're meat and potatoes. You drive through everybody. You know, you do it, you know. And you act like you would fix your meat and potatoes. You don't show you act like you've been there before, you know, respect. So, I mean, I think honor and respect and knowing that there's not a shortcut to it, it's putting in work, you know, regardless. You know, people can say there's athletes that never worked in their life, and, you know, everybody always talk about McEnroe being so talented, but, you know, McEnroe, regardless of what I've heard, I have to believe he committed himself to a level that most people don't understand. And a mental commitment and physical commitment, you know, those are things that whatever you're doing, you know, you've got to...
And then carry the responsibility for it, you know, too.
Sure.
You know, is a big one.
Brad, you know, my dad refers to Jerry Baskin a lot. You know, Jerry Baskin coached Brian Mahaley, who was my age. I believe he did anyway. And this, my dad says, it was a great coaching job because everybody talked about Brian Mahaley was going to get, you know, when he's 14, the game will overpower him. When he's 16, wait till he's 18. Well, I played in my senior year at Clemson. He was the number one player in the country. And he played to his fullest potential based on what he was given. So many parents want to play to a potential they've seen on TV or something instead of playing to the fullest potential of their child or players playing to their own fullest potential. So, anyway.
And you're exactly right about Jerry, but I wanted to throw in, I'm sitting here thinking four generations I know of your grandfather, your father's father, and he passed mm-hmm. down a work ethic and these principles to your father, who then passed them to you, and now you're passing them to your children, and your children then will pass them on again. So we only got a minute or so left, but JP, any quick comments there? I mean, it's thanks for jumping in there and reading Don Patrine's letter. Just all the respect for the website that you have, JP, with We Coach Tennis. Folks, We Coach Tennis is on the Facebook, and JP Weber is tennisdynamics.com. Is that correct, JP?
Yeah, it's not net, but more importantly, look, I really like what you're doing here. I got a chance to work. You know who I've worked with. I got a chance to work with a lot of great coaches through the years, and not a one of them took shortcuts. And they didn't. You know, they may have taken. You know, they may not have been able to get it done with their own kids, but you know, that's neither here nor there. When they coach, when they work with their players, not a single one of them did it in a shortcut manner. You know. When I first went to Clemson to work for you, one of the very first things you told me you were talking about, and I think it's what made us stick together so long, you said, look, I'm not going to coach a kid for today. I'm coaching him for, you know, several years down the road, and I'm still getting coached by you. So I really like what you're doing here. You know, real fast, we go back to the mentorship. Stick to what you're doing here, Coach. Bring coaches like you bring on to this show and celebrate them, the local coaches. Get out of the business, you know, get out of the, you know, you see the same guys at the national level all the time. Get some of these guys that are in the trenches.
Well,
doing
the trenches,
every day.
The Chuck Waldrons.
Yeah.
105 of his kids got college scholarships out of a little town in Clinton,
amazing.
South Carolina.
Guy, he's amazing. I really appreciate you, you know, bringing us
that's
together.
Right.
I've enjoyed
that's
the heck
right.
out of him.
Guys, we got
made in America. Semper Fi tattooed on his lips on. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't prejudiced. He's just made in America.
Happy to have the show and in the box, and then we've got it for all eternity on UR Tennis Network and ChuckCreasy.net. What a show, Brad Emmendorfer. I'm so grateful for the wisdom that you brought on, J.P. Weber. And, folks, this will be played to parents for many, many more years to come. This show, it has been a great one. God bless you. Remember that you are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. Folks, we'll see you next week. This is American Tennis, and I'm Chuck Creasy. Take care of that circle of influence around you. One or two people can make a difference. God bless you.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.